Hi, I'm Brian Grant, and you're listening to On Time, the Brian Grant Foundation podcast about living with Parkinson's. If you want to know more about Brian Grant Foundation, go to briangrant.org.
Hi, this is Katrina Call, Executive Director of the Brian Grant Foundation. Thank you for listening to our podcast, which is one of our many programs to help empower people impacted by Parkinson's disease to lead active and fulfilling lives. Our programs are possible because of the generous support of our donors. Please consider helping us continue this work by making a donation at briangrant.org. Thanks again for listening.
Welcome to the Brian Grant Foundation podcast. I'm thrilled to have you join us today for a special episode dedicated to exploring the unique challenges faced by young women living with Parkinson's disease. I'm joined by two incredible guests who are not only living with Parkinson's themselves, but are also passionate advocates for women in the Parkinson's community. Please welcome from Ireland, Rochelle Flanagan, and from San Francisco, Sri Sripathi, co-founders of the Women's Parkinson's Project. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Good evening.
Rochelle, Sri, your insights and experiences are invaluable as we delve into the topic of stigma surrounding young women with Parkinson's. Sri, you're a full-time photographer and writer, co-founder of the Women's Parkinson's Project and a Davis Finney Foundation ambassador. And Rochelle is a registered dietitian, co-founder of My Moves Matter app and Women's Parkinson's Project. Oof, you guys do a lot.
Well, you're making me sound really cool.
You are cool. Rochelle, you were diagnosed with Parkinson's while pregnant. What was that like?
Well, I suppose I technically wasn't diagnosed while pregnant. I picked it up myself. I was basically working in my diet at a clinic. I was 3 months pregnant at the time. And a patient came back to see me, a weight loss patient, after a five-year gap. And I was writing in my record card for that patient. And I noticed my handwriting was an awful lot smaller than it had been when I'd written in the record card 5 years prior. And I thought that was a bit strange. But when I tried to make my handwriting bigger, I couldn't. That was definitely strange. So did what everyone does, Dr. Google, looked up, and the thing that came up was, for small handwriting, was micrographia. And no matter how hard I tried, I couldn't get anything else but Parkinson's to come up. And I thought, okay, I don't like the sound of this. And then I was actually on a skiing holiday. Now, I wasn't skiing as I was 3 months pregnant, but I was having a hot chocolate, and my husband came down off the slopes to join me, and I said to him, but, you know, my hand just won't stop shaking. And just the penny dropped. I said to him, as long as I don't have Parkinson's. And I just thought, okay, maybe I need to ask for a referral to a neurologist. And yeah, I went to see the neurologist, and he said, you know, well, you know, you're very healthy, you know, pregnant, you're a young woman, you know, it's probably a trapped nerve, or it's, he did a bit of a lewd, possibly, but, you know, it's very unlikely Parkinson's. So he basically put me through a brain scan and a trapped nerve test. I had a lot of sort of problem with it. They came back negative, and I'd basically, because I was pregnant, I couldn't have the DAT scan until my daughter was born and breastfed, which was 7 months after she was born. So I basically had to live with the uncertainty through her, through my pregnancy, and through the 7 months of breastfeeding her. And then I had the DAT scan, and confirmed that I had young onset Parkinson's disease. So
wow.
Yeah.
And then you kept it secret for 2 years.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, because I didn't have I only had the tumor, weirdly, for that month of my pregnancy. And then it went away. So I have, you know, I don't really have a tremor. I've kind of what they call the rigid type and Parkinson's and the tremor type. So I was able to kind of hide it. And I suppose just because it was a brain condition, you know, you just have all of these images of, you know, older men, you know, that, and because it's a brain disease, that you're maybe not as capable. And I just was afraid that my colleagues, my dietetic colleagues, would think I was less capable, and patients might, you know, think I was less capable. So I just decided to keep it to myself. Yeah.
So it's self stigma.
Yeah. I learned that that's what it is. I've learned a lot of things on this journey the past 7 years. But yeah, I actually did read about that it is, and it's actually, I think, almost well, as bad, if not worse, than sort of external stigma.
And oftentimes it's triggered by external stigma that we anticipate. Like, it hasn't even happened yet. We're just worried that it might.
Yeah, actually, that's exactly what happened to me. I was thinking about the outside stigma, which there was, and I think there still is, but I think, you know, a lot of advocacy has happened over the last 7 years since I was diagnosed that is breaking that stigma. You know, like I look at people with MS and they seem to be much more supported in the community and workplaces than the people with young onset Parkinson's are. So.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. Sri, technically you are still not out of the closet, but you're a full-time photographer for an ethnic media online paper, but you're not public about your Parkinson's.
Well, actually, I am very public about my Parkinson's, but it's a little confusing. So all my friends, all my family, everyone on Facebook knows that I have Parkinson's. I posted on Instagram. I posted on LinkedIn.
So you are open.
I am open, but what I'm not open about, I think, is sometimes showing really how it affects me day to day. I have like a, I have another way that I do that, like my behind the scenes life, like the, hey, I'm smiling and I'm happy and I'm not happy that I have Parkinson's, but I'm making the best of it. That's very public. The daily stuff that I have to deal with in managing this disease is not something I often share publicly because it's a lot for me to deal with and it's a lot for somebody else to listen about and to learn about and to listen and to understand. And it can be too much for them. So I have this kind of hesitancy about overwhelming people with what it's like living day to day with this to the point where I might turn them off or they might not want to donate or, you know, raise awareness themselves. So it's kind of like a balance thing that I'm still figuring out.
And do you think that comes from, you were telling me that when you started telling people about it, you were expecting bigger reactions.
Yeah, I really was. I mean, I had a couple of friends who reacted like, oh my God, what? You're kidding. No way. And we'll be here for you. Absolutely. And I had many other people. I actually made a list of everybody I told in the first couple of months and their reactions. Because I'm a little weird that way. I'm a list maker. And a lot of their faces were just blank. I mean, there was no expression, nothing. I don't even think they said, I'm sorry. I mean, some people don't want to hear that, but they didn't really say anything. And a lot of the times it's because right. People don't know what to say. But I thought I at least get more than what I had. So I actually stopped telling people for about 2 to 3 years. And then when I actually became a Davis Finney ambassador is when I actually opened up more. And told many more people.
And then does your work know?
Absolutely. So my job at the time knew, and I told them. I actually didn't tell them I had Parkinson's. I said I was just diagnosed with something that I have to deal with, and I went on short-term disability. And then when I came back, I did tell a few months later my actual supervisor and our vice president and senior vice president that it was Parkinson's. And I got a lovely message from our CEO where he said, Sri, I'm so sorry to hear this. I'm absolutely gutted. I love that he used that word, my favorite word, that you have this. And then when the job I had after that, I was very open about it as well. I was very clear that I had Parkinson's disease. And I told him I also do a lot of advocacy on LinkedIn, social media. If that's going to be a problem for you, I might not be able to accept this job because advocacy is very important to me and how this disease plays a role in my life. And then the job I have now, I was open about it as well with both the organizations that I report to because it's a fellowship. So I have a fellowship that I report to for photography. And then I have the actual media organization that I'm placed with for photography. And I told them the same thing. And so far, it's been very easy. They've accepted it. But sometimes I think people accept it because maybe they don't know what it is. They actually don't know. So something I wanted to post online is how about the Parkinson's affects my ability to be a photographer. And I have a huge fear of actually putting that content out there because once this fellowship ends, if I suddenly want to get a call from the New York Times or the Washington Post, I mean, I'm not saying I will, but let's just say that happens. They're like, Sri, there's an Indian event or there's an Indian thing happening in the Bay Area because the media outlet I work for is Indian focused. We want you to cover it. You know, can you freelance for us? Would they still hire me and reach out to me if they knew about the struggle I face as a child with Parkinson's disease? So that once again, comes to what you mentioned earlier, the issue of stigma.
Right. So you were talking earlier, Sri, about how you try to keep private what your daily struggles, but you're actually struggling right now. What happened?
So I have my period that's about to hit in 3 days, and I took my medication early this morning, a little bit late. And then I found myself going off earlier than anticipated. And normally I do not do this. Normally I never take a medication before the 4 hour mark. It's every 4 hours. Sometimes I push it to 5 or 6 if I can, depending on how my body's working. But I knew I had this podcast episode coming up. I knew I had to get dressed. I knew I had to be, you know, on. So, and I felt myself going off. So I took another pill. And about 45 minutes later, right as I was sitting on my chair, ready to turn on Zoom, I started to feel nauseous and I started to feel dizzy, like I was going to pass out. And I thought, okay, this cannot be what's happening. I'm just imagining it. I'm just going to drink some water. So I started drinking a lot of water, ate a piece of banana, and then I started to feel it get worse. So I immediately knew what was going on. I was having a low blood pressure moment due to the reaction from the medication. And that, for me, what happens is sometimes I pass out, like I crash on the floor. And when I wake up, then it's like I start vomiting quite a bit. And it's like sweats and chills. And it's a pretty extreme reaction. And so that was what was happening right before the call. And so I was very happy to learn that it's not going to be video recorded, because I'm lying in bed right now, very dyskinetic, and just kind of trying to get my blood pressure down.
Well, thanks for sharing that. I'm sorry you're going through that.
Thank you.
So, ladies, take me back to 2019, Kyoto, Japan, the World Parkinson Congress. We kind of all three collided there. I think we met in passing, but it was a momentous catalyst for, especially for the Women's Parkinson's Project.
Oh, I'll just, reply to them, the passing. But I remember very distinctly, we were in one of the breakout rooms, and I think Larry had stood up and made a comment, and one of our friends, Shane, stood up as well. And we were both saying the same thing, is that we need to do more for younger onset people with Parkinson's. And that was a kind of a light switch moment, I think, me was. And then we had organized a kind of an advocacy meetup at the Congress. And that's where I supposedly met you, Sheree.
Well, I mean, we actually met in that room. So Rochelle and I never exchanged, I think we exchanged numbers, but we never officially introduced ourselves. So we were just, I was standing next to her and she was very vibrant and, and you were also there. And I remember all of these people just converging in that small room saying, we all have young onset, we need to do something. It's a very like ad hoc type of meeting that just kind of happened. Someone's like, all the young onset people, let's share into this room and let's start advocating and figuring out what we want to do. So that's when I briefly met Rochelle, but we never really connected. What happened after that was, I'm not quite sure, but I reached out to Rochelle and a couple of other people, including our other co-founder, Kat Hill, who I've known for quite some time, and a few other women that I knew. And I said, hey, guys, I do not have anyone near me or locally that I can connect with that has, young onset Parkinson's, that woman. How do you feel about joining a WhatsApp group that I'm creating so we can all give each other support and just, have a group of women that we can rely on? And so everybody that I asked said yes. So we had initially like maybe 12 people in that group. Quite a few of the people are like ambassadors now, or World Parkinson's Congress ambassadors. They're all doing a lot of amazing things. Omotella Thomas is one of those people, as well as Rebecca Miller, lots of different people. Great group of women. And then it got a little overwhelming for, I think, a couple of people. So they dropped out because, it's like the WhatsApp message flood. You log in and you've got 200 messages, and our executive functioning is not our best asset sometimes with Parkinson's. So we connected like that for a couple of years, and it really helped us during the COVID crisis to stay connected and to give each other support, because there's so many things that we couldn't do as people with Parkinson's that we needed. And this is like a life-saving gift that we had, each other. And then in 2021, in March, is when we actually came up with the idea of the Women's Parkinson's Project. And within a week, we had, within 24 hours, we had a logo. Within a week, we had the website, the Instagram account, the social media account. And it just happened like, boom. And we just started putting out content and working together and making things happen.
And one of the first things you did was a survey of women. Rochelle, tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I suppose it originated, I remember very well, really when she first reached out to me, I was in Puerto Ventura on holidays, and she reached out and said, hey, you know, you work, I work, you know, it's difficult with Parkinson's working, let's, you know, can we support each other kind of thing. And I remember being really grateful to get the call. And, you know, so we would connect regularly, and we'd be talking about women things as you do. And, you know, it's a common conversation amongst women around the world about their periods and, you know, how they feel, you know, and there's Sheree, you know, she's just sharing there with how, you know, her symptoms are worse the week before onset of her period. And that's what I experienced when my daughter was born, like, and we were sort of, you know, begin to realize that it wasn't just us that was noticing this, but there was women on, you know, very social Facebook groups and etc. that were mentioning the same thing. And it, like, every day you go on Facebook to these groups, you will see some young woman say, hey, you know, do you notice that your symptoms get worse around your menstrual cycle? And there's a flood of answers come, oh yeah. So basically, you know, we kind of thought, okay, there's something going on here. And I suppose with my science hat on, kind of looked at the research, and I thought, okay, what is, you know, happening here? So the week before the menstrual bleed, basically your estrogen level drops and your progesterone level drops. So for women who don't have Parkinson's, there's a thing called PMS, premenstrual syndrome, which, you know, Larry, you might have been accustomed, or any man here who has ever had a girlfriend or a wife or whatever. You know, is menstruating would be sort of, you know, maybe a bit more narky, a bit more tired, more grumpy, you know, tearful, can't concentrate as much. You know, there are 100 plus symptoms of PMS. So basically, when you have Parkinson's, these estrogen receptors in the brain and the drop of the estrogen, the progesterone, seems to do something to the dopamine levels. I don't know if it does something to the receptors, drops the dopamine, or actually makes, as Sheree was saying, her medication less effective, so she had to take it earlier today. So basically, we did a survey, and about 240 women around the world responded to it, and 80% odds said that they had similar issues with symptoms getting worse around their menstrual cycle. So it's kind of like PMS on speed when you have Parkinson's, because, you know, you're struggling anyway with the little dopamine, and then you get the swammy, or 1 to 2 weeks out of every month. And the problem is that no one was doing anything about it. You know, I had a woman reach out to me on Facebook, and she said, like, I have to lock myself in the bathroom for a week, actually, because her anxiety gets so bad. She can't go to work. You know, and women give up work because of this, because it just gets too much. And obviously, if you're missing work for 1 to 2 weeks out of every month, it's going to be a bit of a problem with your boss. So that's, you know, why we decided to do the survey. And I suppose what was more shocking in it was that 90% of the women said that their urologists never asked or discussed with them about the impact of their hormones. And to be fair,
that's not just male neurologists, that's all neurologists.
Yes, it was all neurologists, yeah. And I suppose, to be fair, you know, they're not trained in it, but what I would say is, you know, they should be trained in the difference between men and women, generally. So, like, just because you've got Parkinson's doesn't mean you suddenly stop all the other experiences that go on in your body, you know. So, having touched on perimenopause.
So, like, the whole, like, all women have this stigma now because they are not being treated as a woman. They're being treated as somebody with Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And how do we stop that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, came back to one of the things was the Women's Parkinson's Project. We kind of said it was to raise the voices of women in terms of their need for more inclusion in research, more research in women, and better treatment. So we did an awful lot of awareness raising around it and around the survey, got the results. We actually approached Pure Parkinson's Trust and Helen Matthews. And I remember just saying to her, look, you know, there's this really interesting results in the survey, which we did through the PD Avengers. And she said, yeah, I'm willing to host it. And through the people I met at the WPC, I reached out to various women with Parkinson's and also clinicians. So Indu Subramanian, Professor Lee Morrow, you know, we had Kathy Mullen on the webinar and Kat, and we discussed survey results. And we also did a podcast with the PMD Alliance. And we had over 600 women attend between the two webinars. And it kind of blew up even beyond just the hormone stuff in terms of menstrual. It was around menopause, HRT, fear of dementia, fear of living alone, losing jobs, looking after kids. Like, it was just a whole raft of.
Right.
From that, then we decided to write it. I mean, so of women with Parkinson's. So Sonia, your good fellow PD Avenger,
yep.
Self, and then Anne Oosterband, who's a gynecologist, Parkinson's, and four kids. We wrote this paper with three neurologists, and so we've kept going since then.
Yeah, and then now they just posted the third survey on the Michael J. Fox Insight, and the PD Avengers have teamed up. Third of four surveys that they're doing on women and Parkinson's, and so you need some attention that way as well. So I guess the first two surveys had over 3,500 respondents each, and we're hoping for the same.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what was important in that first survey has been replicated. So the one we did through the PD Avengers, we replicated, and very grateful for the MJ Fox, you know, for including the surveys on the Insight platform. But they showed exactly the same results as we showed in our original survey. And then there was also a Spanish group, the Hebron group. They did a survey and showed exactly the same. And what was interesting about those two surveys is they specifically asked about medication effectiveness. So both surveys said medication is not effective about 30 to 40% of the women. So that's a kind of serious problem.
Well, and, you know, as you're going through that, I'm sure that it can lead to feelings of guilt or inadequacy if you feel like you're unable to meet perceived expectations of your family or of your work, or that's a whole different type of stigma.
100%.
Have you guys had that experience?
For me, I'll speak to that. So I have yet to take a day off of work because of my menstrual cycle. And most of the time I just push through. If I have an assignment or an event that I need to cover and I'm feeling all the effects of PMS, menstrual syndrome, all the things, I just push through. And then as soon as I get home and walk in the door, I barely have enough energy to take off my shoes. I crawl into bed and I'm out because the fatigue is so debilitating around that time for me. But as the disease progresses, it does become harder and harder to push through. And then I do wonder, is pushing through the best thing for my health, right? Is it the best thing for my overall well-being? How important is this assignment that I'm on? And then I think, well, this is not affecting guys. This is not affecting other women. You know, I need to be able to be just as they are. And so it's a lot of weight on my shoulders to try and maintain a regular life, doing everything like I did pre-diagnosis with the diagnosis and with the progression. And it can be very stressful and anxiety inducing and not at all healthy in many ways. But I don't know what other options there are.
It's hard to accept that it's okay to be not okay.
Very much so.
Rochelle, have you ever had any challenges in parenting and family dynamics because of the Parkinson's?
I suppose, you know, just as Tree says there, you know, I think, you know, as a mom, you know, there's this, I suppose, you tend to take on the lion's share of looking after the family, you know, as mom. And it's very hard to stop that role. Just as Tree was saying there, you know, you tend to push through. And, you know, you don't want to give up the role either. You don't want to give into it. You want to be be the captain of the ship and be able to, you know, the mums are supposed to be infallible, you know, to a certain extent. But I don't know if that's just a script that needs to change. So yeah, I suppose what I worry about is in the future. I'm coping at the moment, worry about the future in terms of not being always able to do and always being able to push through.
Yeah. Sri, you've mentioned to me offline that there was a time when you had some body image and self-esteem issues. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So I think there are issues that were there from when I was a teenager. I think many women go through this, or young girls, and then women, we go through wanting to look a certain way based upon how we see ourselves represented in media. And as the child of immigrants, you know, there weren't a lot of people out there in the world that looked like me. And so some of the body issues came from that. Then you fast forward to the fact that I have Parkinson's disease, you know, and I'm getting into the best shape of my life prior to diagnosis. I'm living my best life, as people say. Then I get this diagnosis and it's completely life-altering in every way possible. But I don't get a lot of symptoms or side effects or anything for the first few years. And then when I do start to get those symptoms, for me, they're quite visible, particularly facial masking. And there's an awareness campaign going around right now that some advocates are doing about, you know, face masking in women.
Hashtag face PD.
Hashtag face PD, right. And for me, my face, I don't face mask. I droop and then I freeze. I kind of look, I look like a mix between the Emperor in Star Wars, the guy in the screen painting by Klimt, I think it's Klimt, and a basset hound. And this is not an exaggeration. Okay. Not an exaggeration. Hashtag real, you know, real news. And it got to be very physically uncomfortable for me, and I can't control when this happens. And so I found looking at myself in the mirror to be very painful. And I found thinking about people looking at me to be very painful. And I felt very self-conscious, unattractive, unlovable, all the negative things that we can say to ourselves multiplied by infinity. And so what I started doing is I created a separate account for myself on social media that I don't use my name on that account. I don't mention like any of the advocacy work that I do that much. It was an account for me to post videos that are real. You know, for like when I'm feeling horrible, when I'm off medication, when I look like, you know, SHIT, basically, and putting it out there and then looking at it and saying, if I can put myself out there in this way, if I can look at myself and review those videos in this way, if I could find something in myself to love. And anyone who's a friend or family member who knows me will say, of course, you're lovable, you're loved. But the thing is, it has to come from within yourself, right? At the end of the day, people can tell you, you look fine, you look great, you're doing a great job managing Parkinson's, but you've got to believe that inside. It has to come from within, and that is very hard. So this is my way of doing that. So for me, that site and that effort is personal advocacy. You know, if people relate to it, great. I'm not intending that to be my overall advocacy, but it's helping me become comfortable with the dyskinesia that happens in public, the facial masking, the bradykinesia, the tremoring. It's a lot. And I have yet to cry over it other than twice. Once when I got diagnosed and once last week, and it's been almost 10 years. But I do cry at cartoons, at Kleenex commercials, at Dunkin' Donuts commercials. I cried all those things. I just can't cry over this. So yeah, that's what I did.
That's amazing. And congratulations. That's unbelievable, because a lot of people have the opposite problem. A lot of their symptoms are invisible. And, you know, especially early in the stages of the disease, and can lead to delayed diagnosis and dismissal of symptoms by healthcare providers, difficulties in obtaining appropriate treatments and support. And so it's kind of like the flip side.
Yeah, my symptoms are invisible for the first 5 to 6 years. And that's why I landed in this delusion. I'm like, maybe I don't have Parkinson's. Or maybe I'm one of the lucky.
We've all been there.
Yeah. Or maybe I'm one of the lucky ones that the symptoms just won't really happen and I won't have any side effects. And, you know, I'll be one of those people.
And I'm talking to other people with PD and we all laugh together because they're like, we have that same process too. And I'm like, you guys think the same thing? Okay, wow, it's not just me. And it's a very tricky place to be in mentally because they say that there's a honeymoon period which lasts 5 years after diagnosis. And my honeymoon period definitely ended around 5 to 6 years after diagnosis.
Oh, so. Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you for sharing that. Rochelle, I'd like to learn more about My Moves Matter.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it sort of all arose from the work we did around the impact of the hormones on Parkinson's. And we wrote that paper on the unmet needs of women with Parkinson's. And we basically said that we needed to, women were basically being dismissed for experiencing these symptoms. And they were more or less been told that, like, it was in their head, which it is. And we just thought that there needs to be some way that they can actually prove what's happening to them, what they're saying is a real thing. So I was basically asked to take part in a digital patient centre hackathon out of Switzerland. It was during the end of lockdown. And it was basically where they brought patients, you know, representing different conditions together to do a sprint, like a team basically worked for 2 weeks and try and come up with different solutions. So I basically pitched the idea of, you know, developing an app that you could track women's Parkinson's symptoms across the menstrual cycle. And yeah, fast forward, our team won, you know, and I didn't even know there was a prize fund. So I was first of all, you know, surprised we won. And second of all, then they told us we won the prize. So originally it was a 5,000 Swiss francs. And then they thought they really wanted the idea to happen, so they tripled the winnings. And so then I was sitting there thinking, okay, this has happened for a reason. I need to make this happen, you know. So I basically wrote to my local enterprise office and get a feasibility funding, and I did a startup business program that had a stipend with it, so that I could basically get enough money to try and build the app. And It basically, you know, all started with women. I did a focus group with women with Parkinson's during the hackathon. Did one with neurologists during the hackathon. And that was the whole sort of idea about, you know, what it should look like, what it should do for women. And actually it was Rebecca who sort of said, you know, it's really hard when you've got Parkinson's to engage with an app, you know. So it'd be really great if you could just video, if my daughter could video me when I'm really dyskinetic. Because obviously I can't hold the phone, it's kinetic. So, you know, it's just these very, you know, so it's been built with the input of people.
That's great. So the app is available now.
Yeah, so we basically launched it in at WPC in Barcelona. And it's free on Google and the App Store.
You can go to mymovesmatter.com or you can go to pdavengers.com/women.
Hey, fantastic. So yeah, and we also have a study that we're running as well using the app. So it's also exciting news.
This is a big issue. There's a lot to tackle in this, but I think we're going to leave it there and we'll pick it up again in the fall. Is that fair?
Yeah. Well,
because this is a huge topic. We could go on for hours. And you are two amazing women who are doing remarkable things. And I really appreciate you coming on the show.
I tell you what, Larry, before you go, can I just do a plug
for sure?
For our research study that is actually extended out to women in the States.
Yeah.
So we're looking for not only women who are young onset and menstruating, we're looking for women of all ages because we want to look at the impact pregnancy, perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause because there are issues with women not being heard. And we need the evidence so that we can to start pushing for changes, you know, so that we can break the stigma around, you know, these issues for women. So I really appreciate the opportunity to plug this the study. And
sure,
we need all you women out there to take part, please.
And I just wanted to say something really quickly about the Brian Grant Foundation. So when I first got diagnosed in 2015, the Brian Grant Foundation was the first organization that I look to for support, actually. I'm not quite sure how I found them, but
the very first interaction I had with people with Parkinson's was through the Brian Grant Foundation. I drove up all the way from the Bay Area to Oregon to attend a workshop. I think it was over the weekend, a few months after diagnosis. And it was a very much life-changing moment for me. And I just can't thank the Brian Grant Foundation enough for existing. And it kind of is full circle. So I'm delighted to be on this podcast.
Oh, Sri and Rochelle, you're going to make me cry. This is great. Okay. I hope you feel better, Sri. Rochelle, it's great seeing you. You can go put your daughter to bed now. And we will call that a wrap on this episode of the Brian Grant Foundation podcast.
Coming up next time on episode 3, I'll be talking to a young woman from Nairobi, Kenya, who took 14 years to get her diagnosis with Parkinson's. She's now 32. Parkinson's and stigma. It's real. It's happening everywhere. Talk about it more next time.
The Brian Grant Foundation empowers people impacted by Parkinson's to lead active and fulfilling lives. Help support our efforts at briangrant.org. A special thank you to Raphael Sadiq for providing the music for this podcast. This podcast is produced by Brian Griggs. Learn more at GriggsProductions.com.